remnant. You have depended on metal and power, and they have sustained you as far as they could. You have ignored mind and morale, and they have failed you. Now take my advice. You have the Foundation man, Homir Mun. Release him. Send him back to Terminus, and he will carry your peace offers. Stettin's teeth ground behind his pale, set lips. But what choice had he? On the first day of the new year, Homir Mun left Kalgan again. More than 6 months had passed since he had left Terminus, and in the interim, a war had raged and faded. This book is continued at this point, on the other side of this cassette. On the first day of the new year, Homir Mun left Kalgan again. More than 6 months had passed since he had left Terminus, and in the interim, a war had raged and faded. He had come home, but he left escorted. He had come a simple man of private life. He left the unappointed but nevertheless actual ambassador of peace. And what had most changed was his early concern over the Second Foundation. He laughed at the thought of that, and pictured in luxuriant detail the final revelation to Dr. Darrow, to that energetic, young, competent Anthor, to all of them. He knew. He, Homir Mun, finally knew the truth. Chapter 20. I Know. The last 2 months of the Stettinian War did not lag for Homir. In his unusual office as mediator extraordinary, he found himself the center of interstellar affairs, a role he could not help but find pleasing. There were no further major battles, a few accidental skirmishes that could scarcely count, and the terms of the treaty were hammered out with little necessity for concessions on the part of the Foundation. Stettin retained his office, but scarcely anything else. His navy was dismantled, his possessions outside the home system itself made autonomous and allowed to vote for return to previous status, full independence or confederation within the Foundation, as they chose. The war was formally ended on an asteroid in Terminus's own stellar system, site of the Foundation's oldest naval base. Lev Mirus signed for Kalgan, and Homir was an interested spectator. Throughout all that period, he did not see Dr. Darrow, nor any of the others, but it scarcely mattered. His news would keep. And as always, he smiled at the thought. Dr. Darrow returned to Terminus some weeks after VK Day, and that same evening his house served as the meeting place for the five men, who 10 months earlier had laid their first plans. They lingered over dinner, and then over wine, as though hesitating to return again to the old subject. It was Joel Terbor, who, peering steadily into the purple depths of the wine glass with one eye, muttered rather than said, "Well, Homir, you're a man of affairs now, I see. You handled matters well." "I?" Mun laughed loudly and joyously. For some reason, he had not stuttered in months. "I hadn't a thing to do with it. It was Arcadia. By the way, Darrow, how is she? She's coming back from Trantor, I heard."
"You heard correctly," said Darrow quietly. "Her ship should dock within the week."
He looked with veiled eyes at the others, but there were only confused, amorphous exclamations of pleasure. Nothing else. Terbor said, "Then it's over, really. Who would have predicted all this 10 months ago? Mun's been to Kalgan and back. Arcadia's been to Kalgan and Trantor and is coming back. We've had a war and won it by space. They tell you that the vast sweeps of history can be predicted. But doesn't it seem conceivable that all that has just happened, with its absolute confusion to those of us who lived through it, couldn't possibly have been predicted?" "Nonsense," said Anthor acidly. "What makes you so triumphant anyway? You talk as though we have really won a war, when we actually have won nothing but a petty brawl, which has served only to distract our minds from the real enemy." There was an uncomfortable silence, in which only Homir Mun's slight smile struck a discordant note, and Anthor struck the arm of his chair with a bald and fury-filled fist. "Yes, I refer to the Second Foundation. There is no mention of it, and if I judge correctly, every effort to have no thought of it. Is it because this fallacious atmosphere of victory that palls over this world of idiots is so attractive to you that you feel you must participate? Turn somersaults, then. Hands spring your way into a wall, pound one another's back, and throw confetti out the window.
Do whatever you please, only get it out of your system. And when you are quite done and you are yourselves again, return and let us discuss that problem which exists now precisely as it did 10 months ago, when you sat here with eyes cocked over your shoulders for fear of you knew not what. Do you really think that the mind masters of the Second Foundation are less to be feared because you have beaten down a foolish wielder of spaceships? He paused, red-faced and panting. Mun said quietly, Will you hear me speak now, Anthor? Or do you prefer to continue your role as ranting conspirator? Have your say, Homer, said Darrow. But let's all of us refrain from over-picturesqueness of language. It's a very good thing in its place, but at present it bores me. Homer Munn leaned back in his armchair and carefully refilled his glass from the decanter at his elbow. I was sent to Calgan, he said, to find out what I could from the records contained in the Mule's Palace. I spent several months doing so. I seek no credit for that accomplishment. As I have indicated, it was Arcadia whose ingenious intermeddling obtained the entry for me. Nevertheless, the fact remains that to my original knowledge of the Mule's life and times, which I submit was not small, I have added the fruits of much labor among primary evidence, which has been available to no one else. I am, therefore, in a unique position to estimate the true danger of the Second Foundation, much more so than is our excitable friend here. And, grated Anthor, what is your estimate of that danger? Why, zero. A short pause, and Elvet Semmick asked with an air of surprised disbelief, You mean zero danger? Certainly. Friends, there is no Second Foundation. Anthor's eyelids closed slowly, and he sat there, face pale and expressionless. Mun continued, attention centering and loving it. And what is more, there never was one. On what, asked Darrell, do you base this surprising conclusion? I deny, said Mun, that it is surprising. You all know the story of the Mule's search for the Second Foundation. But what do you know of the intensity of that search, of the single-mindedness of it? He had tremendous resources at his disposal, and he spared none of it. He was single-minded, and yet he failed. No Second Foundation was found. One could scarcely expect it to be found, pointed out Turbor restlessly. It had means of protecting itself against inquiring minds. Even when the mind that is inquiring is the Mule's mutant mentality? I think not. But come, you do not expect me to give you the gist of 50 volumes of reports in 5 minutes. All of it, by the terms of the peace treaty, will be part of the Selden Historical Museum eventually, and you will all be free to be as leisurely in your analysis as I have been. You will find his conclusion plainly stated, however, and that I have already expressed. There is not, and has never been, any Second Foundation. Semmick interposed. Well, what stopped the Mule, then? Great galaxy. What do you suppose stopped him? Death did, as it will stop all of us. The greatest superstition of the age is that the Mule was somehow stopped in an all-conquering career by some mysterious entity superior even to himself. It is the result of looking at everything in wrong focus. Certainly no one in the galaxy can help knowing that the Mule was a freak, physical as well as mental. He died in his 30s because his ill-adjusted body could no longer struggle its creaking machinery along. For several years before his death, he was an invalid. His best health was never more than an ordinary man's feebleness. All right, then. He conquered the galaxy, and in the ordinary course of nature proceeded to die. It's a wonder he proceeded as long and as well as he did. Friends, it's down in the very clearest print. You have only to have patience. You have only to look at all the facts in new focus. Darrell said thoughtfully, Good, let us try that, Mun. It would be an interesting attempt, and if nothing else, would help oil our thoughts. These tampered men, the records of which Anthor brought us nearly a year ago, what of them? Help us to see them in focus. Easily. How old a science is encephalographic analysis? Or, put it another way, how well developed is the study of neuronic pathways? We are at the beginning in this respect. Granted, said Darrell. Right. How certain can we be, then, as to the interpretation of what I've heard Anthor and yourself call the Tamper Plateau? You have your theories, but how certain can you be? Certain enough to consider it a firm basis for the existence of a mighty force for which all other evidence is negative? It's always easy to explain the unknown by postulating a superhuman and arbitrary will. It's a very human phenomenon. There have been cases all through galactic history where isolated planetary systems have reverted to savagery. And what have we learned there? In every case, such savages attribute the to them incomprehensible forces of nature, storms, pestilences, droughts, to sentient beings more powerful and more arbitrary than men. It is called anthropomorphism, I believe. And in this respect, we are savages and indulge in it. Knowing little of mental science, we blame anything we don't know on supermen. Those of the Second Foundation, in this case, based on the hint thrown us by Selden. Oh, broke in Anthor. Then you do remember Selden. I thought you'd forgotten. Selden did say there was a Second Foundation. Get that in focus. And are you aware, then, of all Selden's purposes? Do you know what necessities were involved in his calculations? The Second Foundation may have been a very necessary scarecrow with a highly specific end in view. How did we defeat Kalgan, for instance? What were you saying in your last series of articles, Terbor? Terbor stirred his bulk. Yes, I see what you're driving at. I was on Kalgan towards the end, Daryl, and it was quite obvious that morale on the planet was incredibly bad. I looked through their news records and, well, they expected to be beaten. Actually, they were completely unmanned by the thought that eventually the Second Foundation would take a hand, on the side of the First, naturally. Quite right, said Munn. I was there all through the war. I told Stettin there was no Second Foundation, and he believed me. He felt safe. But there was no way of making the people suddenly disbelieve what they had believed all their lives. So that the myth eventually served a very useful purpose in Selden's cosmic chess game. But Anthor's eyes opened, quite suddenly, and fixed themselves sardonically on Munn's countenance. I say you lie. Homier turned pale. I don't see that I have to accept, much less answer, an accusation of that nature. I say it without any intention of personal offense. You cannot help lying. You don't realize that you are. But you lie just the same. Semek laid his withered hand on the young man's sleeve. Take a breath, young fella. Anthor shook him off, none too gently, and said, I'm out of patience with all of you. I haven't seen this man more than half a dozen times in my life, yet I find the change in him unbelievable. The rest of you have known him for years, yet pass it by. It is enough to drive one mad. Do you call this man you've been listening to Homier Munn? He is not the Homier Munn I knew. A medley of shock, above which Munn's voice cried, You claim me to be an imposter? Perhaps not in the ordinary sense, shouted Anthor above the din. But an imposter nonetheless. Quiet, everyone! I demand to be heard. He frowned them ferociously into obedience. Do any of you remember Homier Munn as I do? The introverted librarian who never talked without obvious embarrassment? The man of tense and nervous voice who stuttered out his uncertain sentences? Does this man sound like him? He's fluent, he's confident, he's full of theories, and by space he doesn't stutter. Is he the same person? Even Munn looked confused, and Peleus Anthor drove on. Well, shall we test him? How? Asked Daryl. You ask how? There is the obvious way. You have his encephalographic record of 10 months ago, haven't you? Run one again and compare. He pointed at the frowning librarian and said violently, I dare him to refuse to subject himself to analysis. I don't object, said Munn defiantly. I am the man I always was. Can you know? Said Anthor with contempt. I'll go further. I trust no one here. I want everyone to undergo analysis. There has been a war. Munn has been on Kalgan. Terbor has been on board ship and all over the war areas. Daryl and Semek have been absent too. I've no idea where. Only I have remained here in seclusion and safety, and I no longer trust any of the rest of you. And to play fair, I'll submit to testing as well. Are we agreed then? Or do I leave now and go my own way? Terbor shrugged and said, I have no objection.
I have already said I don't, said Mun.
Semik moved a hand in silent assent, and Anthor waited for Daryl. Finally, Daryl nodded his head.
Take me first, said Anthor.
The needles traced their delicate way across the cross hatchings as the young neurologist sat frozen in the reclining seat, with lidded eyes brooding heavily. From the files, Daryl removed the folder containing Anthor's old encephalographic record. He showed them to Anthor.
That's your own signature, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it's my record. Make the comparison.
The scanner threw old and new onto the screen. All six curves in each recording were there. And in the darkness, Mun's voice sounded in harsh clarity.
Well, now, look there. There's a change.
Those are the primary waves of the frontal lobe. It doesn't mean a thing, Homir. Those additional jags you're pointing to are just anger. It's the others that count. He touched a control knob, and the six pairs melted into one another and coincided. The deeper amplitude of primaries alone introduced doubling.
Satisfied? Asked Anthor.
Daryl nodded curtly and took the seat himself. Semik followed him, and Terbor followed him. Silently, the curves were collected. Silently, they were compared. Mun was the last to take his seat. For a moment, he hesitated. Then, with a touch of desperation in his voice, he said,
Well, now, look, I'm coming in last, and I'm under tension. I expect due allowance to be made for that.
There will be, Daryl assured him. No conscious emotion of yours will affect more than the primaries, and they are not important. It might have been hours, in the utter silence that followed. And in the darkness of the comparison, Anthor said huskily,
Sure, sure, it's only the onset of a complex. Isn't that what he told us? No such thing as tampering. It's all a silly anthropomorphic notion. But look at it. A coincidence, I suppose.
What's the matter? Shrieked Mun. Daryl's hand was tight on the librarian's shoulder.
Quiet, Mun. You've been handled. You've been adjusted by them.
The light went on, and Mun was looking about him with broken eyes, making a horrible attempt to smile.
You can't be serious, surely. There is a purpose to this. You're testing me.
But Daryl only shook his head.
No, no, Homir. It's true.
The librarian's eyes were filled with tears suddenly.
I don't feel any different. I can't believe it.
With sudden conviction.
You're all in this. It's a conspiracy.
Daryl attempted a soothing gesture, and his hand was struck aside.
Mun snarled. You're planning to kill me. By space, you're planning to kill me.
With a lunge, Anthor was upon him. There was the sharp crack of bone against bone, and Homir was limp and flaccid with that look of fear frozen on his face. Anthor rose shakily and said,
We'd better tie and gag him. Later we can decide what to do.
He brushed his long hair back.
Terbor said, How did you guess there was something wrong with him?
Anthor turned sardonically upon him.
It wasn't difficult. You see, I happen to know where the Second Foundation really is.
Successive shocks have a decreasing effect. It was with actual mildness that Semik asked,
Are you sure? I mean, we've just gone through this sort of business with Mun.
This isn't quite the same, returned Anthor.
Daryl, the day the war started, I spoke to you most seriously. I tried to have you leave Terminus. I would have told you then what I will tell you now, if I had been able to trust you.
You mean you have known the answer for a half a year? Smiled Daryl.
I have known it from the time I learned that Arcadia had left for Trantor.
And Daryl started to his feet in sudden consternation.
What had Arcadia to do with it? What are you implying?
Absolutely nothing that is not plain on the face of all the events we know so well. Arcadia goes to Kalgan and flees in terror to the very center of the galaxy, rather than return home. Lieutenant DeRidge, our best agent on Kalgan, is tampered with. Homir Mun goes to Kalgan, and he is tampered with. The Mule conquered the galaxy, but queerly enough, he made Kalgan his headquarters. And it occurs to me to wonder if he was conqueror or perhaps tool. At every turn, we meet with Kalgan. Kalgan. Nothing but Kalgan. The world that somehow survived untouched all the struggles of the warlords for over a century.
Your conclusion, then?
It's obvious. Anthor's eyes were intense.
The Second Foundation is on Kalgan.
Terbor interrupted.
I was on Calgan Anthor. I was there last week. If there was any second foundation on it, I'm mad. Personally, I think you're mad. The young man whirled on him savagely. Then you're a fat fool. What do you expect the second foundation to be? A grammar school? Do you think that radiant fields in tight beams spell out second foundation in green and purple along the incoming spaceship routes? Listen to me, Turbor. Wherever they are, they form a tight oligarchy. They must be as well hidden on the world on which they exist as the world itself is in the galaxy as a whole. Turbor's jaw muscles writhed. I don't like your attitude, Anthor. That certainly disturbs me, was the sarcastic response. Take a look about you here on Terminus. We are at the center, the core, the origin of the First Foundation with all its knowledge of physical science. Well, how many of the population are physical scientists? Can you operate an energy transmitting station? What do you know of the operation of a hyperatomic motor, huh? The number of real scientists on Terminus, even on Terminus, can be numbered at less than 1% of the population. And then what of the second foundation where secrecy must be preserved? There will still be less of the cognoscenti, and these will be hidden even from their own world. Say, said Semik carefully, we just licked Calgan. So we did, said Anthor sardonically. Oh, we celebrate that victory. The cities are still illuminated. They are still shooting off fireworks. They are still shouting over the televisors. But now, when the search is on once more for the second foundation, where is the last place we'll look? Where is the last place anyone will look? Right. Calgan. We haven't hurt them, you know, not really. We've destroyed some ships, killed a few thousands, torn away their empire, taken over some of their commercial and economic power. But that all means nothing. I'll wager that not one member of the real ruling class of Calgan is in the least discomfited. On the contrary, they are now safe from curiosity. But not from my curiosity. What do you say, Daryl? Daryl shrugged his shoulders. Interesting. I'm trying to fit it in with a message I received from Arcadia a few months since. Oh, a message, asked Anthor. And what was it? Well, I'm not certain. 5 short words, but it's interesting. Look, broke in Semik with a worried interest. There's something I don't understand. What's that? Semik chose his words carefully, his old upper lip lifting with each word, as if to let them out singly and reluctantly. Well, now, Homer Munn was saying just a while ago that Harry Seldon was faking when he said that he had established a second foundation. Now you're saying that it's not so, that Seldon wasn't faking, huh? Right, he wasn't faking. Seldon said he had established a second foundation, and so he had. All right, then. But he said something else, too. He said he established the 2 foundations at opposite ends of the galaxy. Now, young man, was that a fake? Because Calgan isn't at the opposite end of the galaxy. Anthor seemed annoyed. That's a minor point. That part may well have been used as a cover-up to protect them. But after all, think. What real use would it serve to have the Mind Masters at the opposite end of the galaxy? What is their function? To help preserve the plan. Who are the main card players of the plan? We, the First Foundation. Where can they best observe us, then, and serve their own ends? At the opposite end of the galaxy? Ridiculous. They're within 50 parsecs, actually, which is much more sensible. I like that argument, said Daryl. It makes sense. Look here, Munn's been conscious for some time, and I propose we loose him. He can't do any harm, really. Anthor looked rebellious, but Homer was nodding vigorously. 5 seconds later, he was rubbing his wrists just as vigorously. How do you feel? Asked Daryl. Rotten, said Munn sulkily. But never mind. There's something I want to ask this bright young thing here. I've heard what he's had to say, and I'd just like permission to wonder what we do next. There was a queer and incongruous silence. Munn smiled bitterly. Well, suppose Calgan is the second foundation. Who on Calgan are they? How are you going to find them? How are you going to tackle them if you find them, huh? Ah, said Daryl. I can answer that, strangely enough. Shall I tell you what Semik and I have been doing this past half year? It may give you another reason, Anthor, why I was so anxious to remain on Terminus all this time. In the first place, he went on, I've been working on encephalographic analysis with more purpose than any of you may suspect. Detecting Second Foundation mines is a little more subtle than simply finding a tamper plateau, and I did not actually succeed. But I came close enough. Do you know, any of you, how emotional control works? It's been a popular subject with fiction writers since the time of the Mule, and much nonsense has been written, spoken, and recorded about it. For the most part, it has been treated as something mysterious and occult. Of course, it isn't. That the brain is the source of a myriad tiny electromagnetic fields, everyone knows. Every fleeting emotion varies those fields in more or less intricate fashion, and everyone should know that, too. Now, it is possible to conceive a mind which can sense these changing fields and even resonate with them. That is, a special organ of the cerebrum can exist, which can take on whatever field pattern it may detect. Exactly how it would do this, I have no idea, but that doesn't matter. If I were blind, for instance, I could still learn the significance of photons and energy quanta, and it could be reasonable to me that the absorption of a photon of such energy could create chemical changes in some organ of the body, such that its presence would be detectable. But of course, I would not be able thereby to understand color. Do all of you follow? There was a firm nod from Anthor, a doubtful nod from the others. Such a hypothetical mind-resonating organ, by adjusting itself to the fields emitted by other minds, could perform what is popularly known as reading emotion, or even reading minds, which is actually something even more subtle. It is but an easy step from that to imagining a similar organ which could actually force an adjustment on another mind. It could orient with its stronger field the weaker one of another mind, much as a strong magnet will orient the atomic dipoles in a bar of steel and leave it magnetized thereafter. I solved the mathematics of Second Foundationism in the sense that I evolved a function that would predict the necessary combination of neuronic paths that would allow for the formation of an organ such as I have described. But unfortunately, the function is too complicated to solve by any of the mathematical tools at present known. That is too bad, because it means that I can never detect a mind worker by his encephalographic pattern alone. But I could do something else. I could, with Semik's help, construct what I shall describe as a mental static device. It is not beyond the ability of modern science to create an energy source that will duplicate an encephalograph-type pattern of electromagnetic field. Moreover, it can be made to shift at complete random, creating, as far as this particular mind sense is concerned, a sort of noise or static, which masks other minds with which it may be in contact. Do you still follow? Semik chuckled. He had helped create blindly, but he had guessed, and guessed correctly. The old man had a trick or two left. Anthor said, I think I do. The device, continued Darrell, is a fairly easy one to produce, and I had all the resources of the Foundation under my control as it came under the heading of war research. And now the mayor's offices and the legislative assemblies are surrounded with mental static. So are most of our key factories. So is this building. Eventually, any place we wish can be made absolutely safe from the Second Foundation or from any future mule. And that's it. He ended quite simply with a flat palm gesture of the hand. Turbor seemed stunned. Then it's all over. Great Selden, it's all over. Well, said Darrell, not exactly. How not exactly? Is there something more? Yes. We haven't located the Second Foundation yet. What? Roared Anthor. Are you trying to say... Yes, I am. Kalgan is not the Second Foundation. How do you know? It's easy, grunted Darrell. You see, I happen to know where the Second Foundation really is. Chapter 21. The Answer That Satisfied. Turbor laughed suddenly, laughed in huge windy gusts that bounced ringingly off the walls and died in gasps. He shook his head weakly and said, Great galaxy, this goes on all night. One after another, we put up our strong men to be knocked down. We have fun, but we don't get anywhere. Space. Maybe all planets are the second foundation. Maybe they have no planet, just key men spread on all the planets. And what does it matter, since Daryl says we have the perfect defense? Daryl smiled without humor. The perfect defense is not enough, Terbor. Even my mental static device is only something that keeps us in the same place. We cannot remain forever with our fists doubled, frantically staring in all directions for the unknown enemy. We must know not only how to win, but whom to defeat. And there is a specific world on which the enemy exists. Get to the point, said Anthor wearily. What's your information? Arcadia, said Daryl, sent me a message. And until I got it, I never saw the obvious. I probably would never have seen the obvious. Yet it was a simple message that went, a circle has no end. Do you see? This book is concluded on cassette number 8. Arcadia, said Daryl, sent me a message. And until I got it, I never saw the obvious. I probably would never have seen the obvious. Yet it was a simple message that went, a circle has no end. Do you see? No, said Anthor stubbornly, and he spoke quite obviously for the others. A circle has no end, repeated Mun thoughtfully, and his forehead furrowed. Well, said Daryl impatiently, it was clear to me. What is the one absolute fact we know about the Second Foundation, huh? I'll tell you. We know that Harry Seldon located it at the opposite end of the galaxy. Homer Munn theorized that Seldon lied about the existence of the Foundation. Peleus Anthor theorized that Seldon had told the truth that far, but lied about the location of the Foundation. But I tell you that Harry Seldon lied in no particular, that he told the absolute truth. But what is the other end? The galaxy is a flat, lens-shaped object. A cross-section along the flatness of it is a circle, and a circle has no end, as Arcadia realized. We, the First Foundation, are located on Terminus at the rim of that circle. We are at an end of the galaxy, by definition. Now follow the rim of that circle and find the other end. Follow it, follow it, follow it, and you will find no other end. You will merely come back to your starting point, and there you will find the Second Foundation. There, repeated Anthor. You mean here? Yes, I mean here, cried Daryl energetically. Why, where else could it possibly be? You said yourself that if the Second Foundationers were the guardians of the Seldon Plan, it was unlikely that they could be located at the so-called other end of the galaxy, where they would be as isolated as they could conceivably be. You thought that 50 parsecs distance was more sensible. I tell you that that is also too far, that no distance at all is more sensible. And where would they be safest? Who would look for them here? Oh, it's the old principle of the most obvious place being the least suspicious. Why was poor Ebling Miz so surprised and unmanned by his discovery of the location of the Second Foundation? There he was, looking for it desperately in order to warn it of the coming of the mule, only to find that the mule had already captured both foundations at a stroke. And why did the mule himself fail in his search? Why not? If one is searching for an unconquerable menace, one would scarcely look among the enemies already conquered. So the Mind Masters, in their own leisurely time, could lay their plans to stop the mule and succeeded in stopping him. Oh, it is maddeningly simple. For here we are with our plots and our schemes, thinking that we are keeping our secrecy, when all the time we are in the very heart and core of our enemy's stronghold. It's humorous. Anthor did not remove the skepticism from his face. You honestly believe this theory, Dr. Daryl? I honestly believe it. Then any of our neighbors, any man we pass in the street, might be a Second Foundation Superman, with his mind watching yours and feeling the pulse of its thoughts. Exactly. And we have been permitted to proceed all this time without molestation? Without molestation? Who told you we were not molested? You yourself showed that Mun has been tampered with. What makes you think that we sent him to Kalgan in the first place entirely of our own volition? Or that Arcadia overheard us and followed him on her own volition, huh? We have been molested without pause, probably. And after all, why should they do more than they have? It is far more to their benefit to mislead us than merely to stop us.
Anthor buried himself in meditation and emerged therefrom with a dissatisfied expression.
Well, then, I don't like it. Your mental static isn't worth a thought. We can't stay in the house forever, and as soon as we leave, we're lost, with what we now think we know. Unless you can build a little machine for every inhabitant in the galaxy.
Yes, but we're not quite helpless, Anthor. These men of the Second Foundation have a special sense which we lack. It is their strength and also their weakness. For instance, is there any weapon of attack that will be effective against a normal, sighted man, which is useless against a blind man?
Sure, said Munn promptly. A light in the eyes.
Exactly, said Darrell.
A good, strong, blinding light.
Well, what of it? Asked Terbor.
But the analogy is clear. I have a mind static device. It sets up an artificial electromagnetic pattern, which to the mind of a man of the Second Foundation would be like a beam of light to us. But the mind static device is a kaleidoscope. It shifts quickly and continuously, faster than the receiving mind can follow.
All right, then. Consider it a flickering light, the kind that would give you a headache if continued long enough. Now intensify that light or that electromagnetic field until it is blinding, and it will become a pain, an unendurable pain, but only to those with the proper sense, not to the unsensed.
Really, said Anthor with the beginnings of enthusiasm.
Have you tried this?
On whom? Of course I haven't tried it, but it will work.
Well, where do you have the controls for the field that surrounds the house? I'd like to see this thing.
Here.
Darrell reached into his jacket pocket. It was a small thing, scarcely bulging his pocket. He tossed the black, knob-studded cylinder to the other. Anthor inspected it carefully and shrugged his shoulders.
It doesn't make me any smarter to look at it. Look, Darrell, what mustn't I touch? I don't want to turn off the house defense by accident, you know.
You won't, said Darrell indifferently.
That control is locked in place.
He flicked at a toggle switch that didn't move.
And what's this knob?
That one varies rate of shift pattern.
Here, this one varies the intensity. It's that which I've been referring to.
May I? Asked Anthor, with his finger on the intensity knob. The others were crowding close.
Why not? Shrugged Darrell.
It won't affect us. Slowly, almost wincingly, Anthor turned the knob, first in one direction, then in another. Terbor was gritting his teeth, while Munn blinked his eyes rapidly. It was as though they were keening their inadequate sensory equipment to locate this impulse which could not affect them. Finally, Anthor shrugged and tossed the control box into Darrell's lap.
Well, I suppose we can take your word for it, but it's certainly hard to imagine that anything was happening when I turned the knob.
But naturally, Peleus Anthor, said Darrell with a tight smile. The one I gave you was a dummy. You see, I have another.
He tossed his jacket aside and seized a duplicate of the control box that Anthor had been investigating, which swung from his belt.
You see, said Darrell, and in one gesture turned the intensity knob to maximum. And with an unearthly shriek, Peleus Anthor sank to the floor. He rolled in his agony, whitened gripping fingers clutching and tearing futilely at his hair. Munn lifted his feet hastily to prevent contact with the squirming body, and his eyes were twin depths of horror. Semek and Terbor were a pair of plaster casts, stiff and white. Darrell, somber, turned the knob back once more, and Anthor twitched feebly once or twice and lay still. He was alive, his breath racking his body.
Lift him onto the couch, said Darrell, grasping the young man's head.
Help me here.
Terbor reached for the feet. They might have been lifting a sack of flour.
Then, after long minutes, the breathing grew quieter, and Anthor's eyelids fluttered and lifted. His face was a horrid yellow. His hair and body was soaked in perspiration, and his voice, when he spoke, was cracked and unrecognizable.
Don't, he muttered. Don't do that again. You don't know. Oh.
It was a long, trembling moan.
We won't do it again, said Darrell, if you will tell us the truth.
You are a member of the Second Foundation?
Let me have some water, pleaded Anthor.
Get some, Turbor, said Daryl, and bring the whiskey bottle. He repeated the question after pouring a jigger of whiskey and two glasses of water into Anthor. Something seemed to relax in the young man.
Yes, he said wearily. I am a member of the Second Foundation.
Which, continued Daryl, is located on Terminus? Here?
Yes, yes. You are right in every particular, Dr. Daryl.
Good. Now explain what's been happening this past half year. Tell us.
I would like to sleep,
whispered Anthor. Later. Speak now. A tremulous sigh. Then words, low and hurried. The others bent over him to catch the sound.
The situation was growing dangerous. We knew that Terminus and its physical scientists were becoming interested in brainwave patterns, and that the times were ripe for the development of something like the mind static device. And there was growing enmity toward the Second Foundation. We had to stop it without ruining Selden's plan. We tried to control the movement. We tried to join it. It would turn suspicion and efforts away from us. We saw to it that Kalgan declared war as a further distraction. That's why I sent Mun to Kalgan. Stettin's supposed mistress was one of us. She saw to it that Mun made the proper moves.
Kalya is, cried Mun, but Daryl waved him silent. Anthor continued, unaware of any interruption.
Arcadia followed. We hadn't counted on that. Can't foresee everything. So Kalya maneuvered her to Trantor to prevent interference. That's all. Except that we lost.
You tried to get me to go to Trantor, didn't you? Asked Daryl. Anthor nodded.
Had to get you out of the way. The growing triumph in your mind was clear enough. You were solving the problems of the mind static device.
Why didn't you put me under control?
Couldn't. Had my orders. We were working according to a plan. If I improvised, I would have thrown everything off. Plan only predicts probabilities. You know that. Like Selden's plan.
He was talking in anguished pants and almost incoherently. His head twisted from side to side in a restless fever.
We worked with individuals, not groups. Very low probabilities involved. Lost out. Besides, if control you, someone else invent device. No use. Had to control times. More subtle. First speaker's own plan. Don't know all angles. Except didn't work.
He ran down. Daryl shook him roughly. You can't sleep yet. How many of you are there?
Huh? What'd you say? Oh, not many. Be surprised. 50. Don't need more.
All here on Terminus?
5. 6 out in space. Like Kalya. Gotta sleep.
He stirred himself suddenly as though to one giant effort, and his expressions gained in clarity. It was a last attempt at self-justification, at moderating his defeat.
Almost got you at the end. Would have turned off defenses and seized you. Would have seen who was master. But you gave me dummy controls. Suspected me all along.
And finally he was asleep. Turbor said in awed tones, How long did you suspect him, Daryl?
Ever since he first came here, was the quiet response.
He came from Cleese, he said. But I knew Cleese, and I knew on what terms we parted. He was a fanatic on the subject of Second Foundation, and I had deserted him. My own purposes were reasonable, since I thought it best and safest to pursue my own notions by myself. But I couldn't tell Cleese that, and he wouldn't have listened if I had. To him I was a coward and a traitor, perhaps even an agent of the Second Foundation. He was an unforgiving man, and from that time, almost to the day of his death, he had no dealings with me. Then suddenly, in his last few weeks of life, he writes me, as an old friend, to greet his best and most promising pupil as a co-worker, and begin again the old investigation.
It was out of character. How could he possibly do such a thing without being under outside influence? And I began to wonder if the only purpose might not be to introduce into my confidence a real agent of the Second Foundation. Well, it was so. He sighed and closed his own eyes for a moment. Semmick put in hesitantly, "What will we do with all of them, these Second Foundation fellas?" "I don't know," said Darrell sadly. "We could exile them, I suppose. There's Zoranel, for instance. They can be placed there, and the planet saturated with mind static. The sexes can be separated, or better still, they can be sterilized. And in 50 years, the Second Foundation will be a thing of the past. Or perhaps a quiet death for all of them would be kinder." "Do you suppose," said Terbor, "we could learn the use of this sense of theirs? Or are they born with it, like the mule?" "I don't know. I think it is developed through long training, since there are indications from encephalography that the potentialities of it are latent in the human mind. But what do you want that sense for? It hasn't helped them." He frowned. Though he said nothing, his thoughts were shouting. It had been too easy. Too easy. They had fallen, these invincibles, fallen like book villains. And he didn't like it. Galaxy. When can a man know he is not a puppet? How can a man know he is not a puppet? Arcadia was coming home, and his thoughts shuddered away from that which he must face, in the end. She was home for a week, then two, and he could not lose the tight check upon those thoughts. How could he? She had changed from child to young woman in her absence by some strange alchemy. She was his link to life. His link to a bittersweet marriage that scarcely outlasted his honeymoon. And then, late one evening, he said as casually as he could, "Arcadia, what made you decide that Terminus contained both foundations?" They had been to the theater, in the best seats with private trimensional viewers for each. Her dress was new for the occasion, and she was happy. She stared at him for a moment, then tossed it off. "Oh, I don't know, Father. It just came to me." A layer of ice thickened about Dr. Darrell's heart. "Think," he said intensely. "This is important. What made you decide both foundations were on Terminus?" She frowned slightly. "Well, there was Lady Calia. I knew she was a Second Foundationer. Anthor said so, too." "But she was on Calgan," insisted Darrell. "What made you decide on Terminus?" And now Arcadia waited for several minutes before she answered. What had made her decide? What had made her decide? She had the horrible sensation of something slipping just beyond her grasp. She said, "She knew about things, Lady Calia did, and must have had her information from Terminus. Doesn't that sound right, Father?" But he just shook his head at her. "Father," she cried, "I knew. The more I thought, the surer I was. It just made sense." There was that lost look in her father's eyes. "It's no good, Arcadia. It's no good. Intuition is suspicious when concerned with the Second Foundation. You see that, don't you? It might have been intuition, and it might have been control." "Control? You mean they changed me? Oh, no, no, they couldn't." She was backing away from him. "But didn't Anthor say I was right? He admitted it, he admitted everything. And you found the whole bunch right here on Trantor, didn't you? Didn't you?" She was breathing quickly. "I know, but... Arcadia, will you let me make an encephalographic analysis of your brain?" She shook her head violently. "No, no, I'm too scared." "Of me, Arcadia? There's nothing to be afraid of, but we must know. You see that, don't you?" She interrupted him only once after that. She clutched at his arm just before the last switch was thrown. "What if I am different, Father? What will you have to do?" "I won't have to do anything, Arcadia. If you're different, we'll leave. We'll go back to Trantor, you and I, and we won't care about anything else in the galaxy." Never in Darrell's life had an analysis proceeded so slowly, cost him so much, and when it was over, Arcadia huddled down and dared not look. Then she heard him laugh, and that was information enough. She jumped up and threw herself into his opened arms. He was babbling wildly as they squeezed one another.
The house is under maximum mind static, and your brain waves are normal. We really have trapped them, Arcadia, and we can go back to living. Father, she gasped, can we let them give us medals now? How did you know I'd ask to be left out of it? He held her at arm's length for a moment, then laughed again. Never mind. You know everything. All right, you can have your medal on a platform. With speeches. And Father? Yes? Can you call me Arcady from now on? But... Very well, Arcady. Slowly the magnitude of the victory was soaking into him and saturating him. The foundation, the first foundation, now the only foundation, was absolute master of the galaxy. No further barrier stood between themselves and the Second Empire. The final fulfillment of Selden's plan. They had only to reach for it. Thanks to... Chapter 22. The Answer That Was True. An unlocated room on an unlocated world. And a man whose plan had worked. The first speaker looked up at the student. 50 men and women, he said. 50 martyrs. They knew it meant death or permanent imprisonment, and they could not even be oriented to prevent weakening, since orientation might have been detected. Yet they did not weaken. They brought the plan through, because they loved the greater plan. Might they have been fewer? Asked the student doubtfully. The first speaker slowly shook his head. It was the lower limit. Less could not possibly have carried conviction. In fact, pure objectivism would have demanded 75 to leave margin for error. Never mind. Have you studied the course of action as worked out by the Speaker's Council 15 years ago? Yes, Speaker. And compared it with actual developments? Yes, Speaker. Then after a pause. I was quite amazed, Speaker. I know. There is always amazement. If you knew how many men labored for how many months, years, in fact, to bring about the polish of perfection, you would be less amazed. Now tell me what happened, in words. I want your translation of the mathematics. Yes, Speaker. The young man marshaled his thoughts. Essentially, it was necessary for the men of the First Foundation to be thoroughly convinced that they had located and destroyed the Second Foundation. In that way, there would be reversion to the intended original. To all intents, Terminus would once again know nothing about us, include us in none of their calculations. We are hidden once more, and safe, at the cost of 50 men. And the purpose of the Kalganian War? To show the Foundation that they could beat a physical enemy, to wipe out the damage done to their self-esteem and self-assuredness by the Mule. There you are insufficient in your analysis. Remember, the population of Terminus regarded us with distinct ambivalence. They hated and envied our supposed authority, yet they relied on us implicitly for protection. If we had been destroyed before the Kalganian War, it would have meant panic throughout the Foundation. They would then never have had the courage to stand up against Stettin when he then attacked, and he would have. Only in the full flush of victory could the destruction have taken place with minimum ill effects. Even waiting a year thereafter might have meant a too great cooling-off spirit for success. The student nodded. I see. Then the course of history will proceed without deviation in the direction indicated by the plan. Unless, pointed out the first speaker, further accidents, unforeseen and individual, occur. And for that, said the student, we still exist. Except, one facet of the present state of affairs worries me, Speaker. The First Foundation is left with the mind-static device, a powerful weapon against us. That, at least, is not as it was before. A good point. But they have no one to use it against. It has become a sterile device, just as without the spur of our own menace against them, encephalographic analysis will become a sterile science. Other varieties of knowledge will once again bring more important and immediate returns. So this first generation of mental scientists among the First Foundation will also be the last. And in a century, mind static will be a nearly forgotten item of the past. Well, the student was calculating mentally. I suppose you're right. But what I want you most to realize, young man, for the sake of your future in the Council, is the consideration given to the tiny intermeshings that were forced into our plan of the last decade and a half, simply because we dealt with individuals. There was the manner in which Anthor had to create suspicion against himself in such a way that it would mature at the right time. But that was relatively simple. There was the manner in which the atmosphere was so manipulated that to no one on Terminus would it occur, prematurely, that Terminus itself might be the center they were seeking. That knowledge had to be supplied to a young girl, Arcadia, who would be heeded by no one but her own father. She had to be sent to Trantor thereafter, to make certain that there would be no premature contact with her father. Those two were the two poles of a hyperatomic motor, each being inactive without the other. And the switch had to be thrown. Contact had to be made at just the right moment. I saw to that. And the final battle had to be handled properly. The Foundation's fleet had to be soaked in self-confidence, while the fleet of Kalgan made ready to run. I saw to that also. Said the student, "It seems to me, Speaker, that you, I mean all of us, were counting on Dr. Darrell not suspecting that Arcadia was our tool. According to my check on the calculations, there was something like a 30% probability that he would so suspect. What would have happened then?" "We had taken care of that. What have you been taught about tamper plateaus? What are they? Certainly not evidence of the introduction of an emotional bias. That can be done without any chance of possible detection by the most refined conceivable encephalographic analysis. A consequence of Leffert's theorem, you know. It is the removal, the cutting out of previous emotional bias that shows. It must show. And, of course, Anthor made certain that Darrell knew all about tamper plateaus. However, when can an individual be placed under control without showing it? Where there is no previous emotional bias to remove. In other words, when the individual is a newborn infant with a blank state of mind. Arcadia Darrell was such an infant here on Trantor 15 years ago, when the first line was drawn into the structure of the plan. She will never know that she has been controlled, and will be all the better for it, since her control involved the development of a precocious and intelligent personality. The first speaker laughed shortly. In a sense, it is the irony of it all that is most amazing. For 400 years, so many men have been blinded by Selden's words, the other end of the galaxy. They have brought their own peculiar physical science thought to the problem, measuring off the other end with protractors and rulers, ending up eventually either at a point in the periphery, 180 degrees around the rim of the galaxy, or back at the original point. Yet our very greatest danger lay in the fact that there was a possible solution based on physical modes of thought. The galaxy, you know, is not simply a flat ovoid of any sort, nor is the periphery a closed curve. Actually, it is a double spiral, with at least 80% of the inhabited planets on the main arm. Terminus is the extreme outer end of the spiral arm, and we are at the other. Since what is the opposite end of a spiral? Why, the center. But that is trifling. It is an accidental and irrelevant solution. The solution could have been reached immediately if the questioners had but remembered that Harry Selden was a social scientist, not a physical scientist, and adjusted their thought processes accordingly. What could opposite ends mean to a social scientist? Opposite ends on the map? Of course not. That's the mechanical interpretation only. The first foundation was at the periphery, where the original empire was weakest, where its civilizing influence was least, where its wealth and culture were most nearly absent. And where is the social opposite end of the galaxy? Why, at the place where the original empire was strongest, where its civilizing influence was most, where its wealth and culture were most strongly present. Here, at the center, at Trantor, capital of the empire of Selden's time. And it is so inevitable. Harry Selden left the second foundation behind him to maintain, improve, and extend his work. That has been known, or guessed at, for 50 years. But where could that best be done? At Trantor, where Selden's group had worked, and where the data of decades had been accumulated. And it was the purpose of the second foundation to protect the plan against enemies. That, too, was known. And where was the source of greatest danger to Terminus and the plan? Here. Here at Trantor, where the Empire, dying though it was, could, for 3 centuries, still destroy the Foundation, if it could only have decided to do so. Then when Trantor fell and was sacked and utterly destroyed a short century ago,